All right. So we are going to be seeing you March 29th at the College Street Music Hall in New Haven. When's the last time you were in Connecticut?
Wow. I can't really recall right now the last time I was in Connecticut, but I'm going to guess that it was on the Unstoppable tour. So 2.5 years ago, something like that.
Well, time flies.
1.5 years, maybe. Someone should check that out online.
So for the Surfing to Shockwave tour, it's a little different than the tours you've done in the past, as it's covering the whole career. Is the process for developing a set list for this tour much different than it has been in the past? And, you know, how do you look at all the stuff you've done and say, yes, this should be in the tour and maybe this one can wait for another day?
Well, the Surfing the Shockwave tour is in an evening with format, which means there are no opening bands. We take the stage and we own the stage from the beginning of the night all the way to the end. This gives us a great opportunity to dip into the entire catalog over the last 30 years and pull out not only the fan favorites and obviously the new tracks from Shockwave Supernova, but also songs that haven't really had enough time being played live for one reason or another. You know, they didn't fit with previous shows. Or maybe we just think they're so crazy we got to play them, you know, once again, which would be like in the case of the song Not of the Surf, which is the album that was actually the first full-length album that I put out. And so we play the title track, and that's, I'm not sure why it didn't wind up in the title of the tour, but it's just one of those funny things. I think Surfing the Shockwave just sounded better. So, but the format's really great, and we take an intermission. This also gives us an opportunity to create a show that has just so many more dynamics than you can cram into, let's say, 90 minutes or less sometimes, like if you're doing a G3 show where you've only got 50 minutes to play. Having the evening with format allows us to really not only play a larger variety of styles from all the records, but also to feature the individual guys in the band in different ways. And so it's great. It's a lot of fun. It's cathartic. It's, you know, artistically satisfying.
You know, I know you've said before that it can be kind of a pain. Well, I don't know if pain is the right word, but when you're putting together a set list, you have to make sure that you're covering the hits. You know, everyone's going to want to hear Flying in a Blue Dream or Summer Song. So I have to ask you, if you had the opportunity to put together your set list, you don't have to worry about covering things that necessarily people want to hear, but your ideal set list, do you have a couple songs off the top of your head that you'd want to have that, you know, maybe you don't get to play as often as you'd like?
I think my ideal set list is kind of like what we're doing right now. I like being able to play music from the entire catalog because, in my view, I never really stop working on them. So I don't really, I don't rate them the way I would look at, let's say, a set list for an artist that I like to follow. Because I'm the composer, I'm, you know, privy to the 1,001 versions of the song that never made it to the album. And so I'm often thinking about that every time I take the stage. I have a chance to work on it again, to make it a little bit better, to bring some new depth, you know, to the composition. And then, of course, every time we go out on tour, the other guys bring something new. Sometimes I've got a brand new band, or they've had some different experiences that they bring back to the stage. And we sort of plug that into an old favorite, and we can kind of reinvent it. So as long as, you know, we're playing my music, it's an unbelievable pleasure. So that's the way I look at it.
So we're still going to be seeing Marco, Brian, and Mike on the tour in College Street, right? Still have the same old band?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, Marco Miniman on drums, Brian Beller on bass guitar, and Mike Keneally playing guitar and keyboards. An absolutely amazing band. They always I think push me every night to play harder, better, deeper. It's just one of these bands that we go on smiling and laughing, and it just keeps going. We just have a good time all the time we're on stage. So I think that's kind of like the best recommendation, you know.
Absolutely. So I have to tell you, I think one of the, at least for me, one of the reasons that I think your music has been able to last as long as it has is that it retains a certain melodic or almost a vocal quality to it. And I think a lot of instrumentalists seek to do that with their art. They want to sort of almost separate the instrument from the instrument, if that makes any sense. And I guess my question is, do you find that you have an approach to the songwriting in the sense that it's very methodical or scientific as it relates to theory, or do you think you just kind of let your consciousness take you where it goes and see what happens? Do you have a single approach, or is it just kind of all over the board for when you're doing your songwriting?
I like to approach songwriting purely from an inspirational point. I wait until I'm inspired by something that's happening to me, something that if I'm remembering a person, an interaction, good times, bad times, things I read about, things I imagine, but it has to come there to rest, to translate, to try to understand and grapple with some feeling that I'm having about all those subjects. And then I just turn that into music, and I let that very specific, particular story indicate to me which notes to leave out and which notes are important. And so that's, you know, the training, the music training just pops in if I'm at a loss for a moment, or sometimes it comes in just to illuminate something that's interesting that I've come up with.
Do you find that sitting down?
Excuse me.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm saying it's always that case. You know, I know a lot of people don't quite understand the difference between, you know, knowing music theory and not knowing it. And very often they think if you know it, then that's all you do. You know, you put on your thinking cap and you calculate musical structures, but it couldn't be farther from the truth. It's just something that's there. It's like vocabulary. If you have a limited vocabulary, then you will express yourself in a limited way. And the more vocabulary you have, the more the times that the right word comes to your mind when you need to express something very specific. It doesn't change how you express yourself or what you want to express. It just facilitates a better way. And I think people pick up on that because when they hear my music, each song is about a specific subject. It's not a self-promotional vehicle for my technique. Never has been. It's always about the stories that the notes represent.
So I don't want you to, if I had more time, I'd maybe pick your brain a little more on the specifics about the songwriting. But for people that want to pick your brain a little bit more and get to know about your process, they do have an opportunity coming up. G4 Experience is going to happen again this year in New York. Can you tell us a little bit about how the G4 Experience works and what you hope to get out of this year?
Well, the G4 Experience is a 4 to 5 day clinic, total immersive guitar experience. I get together with three other superstars, this time Eric Johnson, Alex Skolnick, and Mike Keneally. We have an additional guest, Steve I, who comes for one day and sort of takes over and shares his brilliance with everybody. And we basically go to a venue, in this case, it's the Glen Cove Mansion on Long Island in New York. And we can handle about 200 students. And for those 4 days of intensive clinics given by all the performers and jam sessions and then performances at night, It's just one of the craziest things a guitar player could do, because they get surrounded with players like themselves on all levels, beginners to advanced players. But in a very informal setting, they get to hang out with us, and we give clinics starting at about 10 in the morning all the way till, I don't think there's a curfew at night, really. We kind of break the walls down between performer and fan and performer and student, and we share everything that we know about the intricacies of guitar playing, music in general, music theory, anything they want to ask us. They're basically hanging around in this place with us. And this is the third year that we've done it. We did two out in Cambria in California, a beautiful location. And this time we decided we'd go to the East Coast, just coincidentally, we're very close to where Steve I and myself grew up, as well as Mike Keneally. He was also born on Long Island. So it's a bit of a cool homecoming as well. But they're really fun events. I really like doing them. It's a great opportunity to have fun, to perform, but also to teach.
I was fortunate enough to be able to attend last year, and I can say that it is definitely, I think, musically a pretty life-changing experience to be able to get to ask those questions and get that information and share it with the other people that you know. Do you think that being in New York so close to your hometown and sort of coming back to where it all began is going to impact the way that G4 is run this year, or do you think it's going to be pretty much along the same lines as the last 2 years?
I think the location will have, two profound effects. Number one, obviously, August in New York has got a whole different set of weather conditions than the Central California coast. We will be indoors, which actually adds a lot of sonic control, which I'm looking forward to. Out in Cambria, as you remember, a lot of the clinics were done outside. So that's always a bit interesting to deal with as a guitar player, not only the way the guitar operates, but also just how things sound and just doing things in tents, in the great out California outdoors. So we'll be in a better environment, I think, sonically, which will be fun. But I think on the other side of it, I think that there's going to be an emotional component, at least for me, because every time I return home, it's a special feeling. I like being there, and I'll be bringing a lot of those emotions into my performances.
We're definitely looking forward to the experience. And on the subject of all things relating to the letter G, we recently found out that G3 2016 has been put together. Can you tell us a little bit about this year and how the tour is going to work?
We do have some G3 shows coming up in this season's tour of Europe. We started last year. We did about 9 weeks in Europe, and there's Europe is so big now for touring that you could spend about a year and a half just trying to get everywhere. So we wanted to go back mainly to do a lot of festivals, and then the opportunity came up to do some G3 shows. The G3 guitar festival is something that my manager and I have managed since 1996, and it's a difficult process to pull people out of their bands and their own touring schedules to get them together. So we were surprised and very lucky that we were going to be able to get the Aristocrats and Steve I basically in the same general location for about a week or two. So I believe we have some shows in Italy and Germany coming up right in the middle of the festival tour. So I'm really looking forward to getting back on stage with Steve and finally getting Guthrie on stage in a G3 format. That's something I've wanted to do ever since he put out Errata Cakes. He's a fantastic guitar player and a great addition to the G3 family.
I think it promises to be a pretty fantastic show. Now, I know that you're a busy man. You have things to do. I have one last question for you, a little out of left field. But I remember when we were at G4, someone had brought up a question about gear. And you made the point that before you worry about things like your guitars and your amplifiers, what's really important is that first you be great. So what I'd like to pick your brain about is both musically and I guess in general as people, what's your recommendation on helping people become great and to sort of reach their internal greatness? You know, how did you do it for yourself, and do you have any advice on helping people kind of find that within themselves, whether it's for music or anything in their life?
Oh, you know, when you say something like, you know, just do your best to try to be great, that's kind of a crazy thing to say. But because, you know, that's all I'm trying to do. So I'm with you on that one. Every day I just try to do my best and, you know, use all of my talents to their fullest. That's more of a quest than it is a detailed set of instructions. I don't think anybody can be so presumptuous to say that they've figured out, you know, how to be great and lay it out step by step. Everyone has to sort of figure that out for themselves. But it's more of an attitude, I think, you know, that than a set of exercises or instructions or plans. But if you get into the spirit of it, I think then, I mean, that's the most important thing.
I think words to live by, I'm sure. So I know you have a nice concert ahead of you and a busy schedule, so I won't hold you up any longer. But, Joe, it was a pleasure to talk to you. Looking forward to seeing you March 29th at the College Street Theater in New Haven. Joe, have a wonderful rest of the tour, and we'll see you at G4.
Thank you so much. Good to talk to you.
Here, have a great day.